instance. She looked at Grace carefully. Why did you decide to come here? Grace began to cut up more of her dinner to give to Millie, who had wolfed down her first portion and was banging her plate on the table. Adam thought it would be good for us to get out of the rat race for a while, try something different. We both thought so, she amended. Well, it's certainly different to London, Meredith said. I often think about what will happen to the village when my generation dies out. Will people stick it out here, ignoring the lure of the big cities, or will it be abandoned? I have a feeling it'll become an out-of-the-way holiday destination, and these old houses steeped in history will be nothing more than the temporary homes of travellers. Grace bit her lip. It was probably best not to mention that she was considering renting out Hawthorne Cottage as a holiday home. How long was the school open here? She asked, hoping to move to a more comfortable topic. It closed down in the late 60s, when there were no longer enough children to sustain it. My brood had to get a bus over the hill to Octon. Did Adam not tell you anything of the history of the village? Grace shook her head. I imagined he'd have plenty of time to show me around, she added to herself. I'm not sure how much he knew, she said. I don't think he ever came here until after his mother had died. Meredith seemed somber. Rachel was only 18 when she left. There were 5 years between us, but we were good friends, she said. Since we were the only young girls in the village, we leaned on each other. I was shocked when she vanished without warning. Although we hadn't seen as much of each other since I'd gotten married and had Veronica. Then, all those years later, Adam was back here with his grandparents. I hadn't even known that Rachel had a child. But as I said, if you have a connection to this place, it draws you back in, one way or another. Of course, Adam wouldn't have lived here that summer if Rachel hadn't died. She paused, then shook her head as though clearing unpleasant memories. Adam was a rather intense young man. I remember that. But I put it down to grieving rather than character. He was terribly young to be without his mother. Meredith looked intently towards the picture window as she spoke, as though something was visible to her in the darkness. Grace felt her curiosity growing. Did you know Adam's father? Adam hadn't talked about him much. The topic was obviously painful, so she had never pressed it. Yes, I knew him. Meredith's mouth tightened into a grim line. Jonathan Templeton. He lived on a farm not far away. Everyone around here knew him. He was quite the catch. Rachel was madly in love with him. From what I've learned since, I gather he got her pregnant just before his family emigrated to Australia on one of those £10 tickets. So he fled from the responsibility, and afterwards, she ran away. Adam didn't know much about him, Grace confided. He knew his name, and that Rachel ran off to stay with some friends in York when she was pregnant. Gave birth to Adam there. When Adam was 2, she began a love affair that lasted the rest of her life, although she never married the man. They never even lived together. He was well off, apparently, and took care of Rachel and Adam financially. It was only after Rachel died that Adam found out the man already had a wife and 2 children. Adam never spoke to him again after that. Meredith had stopped eating to listen as Grace trailed off. Had a new baby, and their return to the cottage triggered unpleasant memories for Adam. He had been so in love with Millie from the first moment he held her, but he must have wished that his mother could have seen her grandchild, and he surely would have dwelled on what it meant to him to be a dad, having never known his real father, and feeling ultimately betrayed by the man who had taken on the role instead. What were his deepest feelings about fatherhood? Where might they have driven him to? Grace put down her knife and fork, her pulse beginning to race. She picked up a napkin to wipe Millie's hands, trying to hide her distress, when Meredith set her cutlery down on her empty plate, placed her arms on the table, leaned forward, and said, "Actually, Grace, there's something I want to talk to you about." Grace stopped what she was doing, wary of Meredith's purposeful tone. "I'd like to buy Hawthorne Cottage." "Oh," Grace answered, astonished. She let go of Millie's hands and sat back. "The thing is, I can't sell it right now, even if I wanted to. Adam put it in joint names, so there are legal issues while he is missing." "I suspected that might be the case," Meredith said, without missing a beat. "But if you're interested in my proposition, my son-in-law, Stephen, is a lawyer. I can ask him to look into it further. See if there's anything you can do. I'd be happy to make some sort of arrangement. Perhaps rent it now, in hopes of buying it in future." Grace had been caught completely off guard. As Meredith held her gaze, she wondered if these meals had been ploys to butter her up. She'd thought that Meredith was being friendly, but perhaps there had always been more to it. "Why would you want to do that?" she asked. "Well, I'd like to sell this place eventually. None of my girls want to live here, and it'll be too big for me to manage on my own as I get older. I'd enjoy a bit of traveling with the extra money. But I've lived in this village all my life. I want to stay put. Hawthorne Cottage would be just right for me. I could sublet it until I'm ready to move in myself." This seemed an entirely reasonable explanation, but Grace still didn't want to be rushed into any promises she might regret. "I appreciate the offer, but I'm not sure what I want to do yet," she said. "Let me think about it." There was an awkward lull in conversation as Meredith got up without a word and began collecting their plates. She disappeared through to the kitchen, and Grace waited uneasily for her to come back. A moment later, Meredith returned with a large bowl of trifle. She sat down and began to ladle a portion into a bowl, her spoon repeatedly striking the china with a harsh clang. "I'm sorry, Grace. I didn't mean to put you in a difficult position. Perhaps I shouldn't have brought it up. I had imagined you wouldn't want to stay around. I thought I might be doing you a favor. Maybe I presumed a bit too much. But think about what I've said, won't you? And let me know if you'd like to discuss it further." "Thank you," Grace replied, accepting the bowl of dessert that Meredith held out to her. "You took me by surprise, but I'll certainly consider it."
"Right then."
Meredith was all brisk and businesslike now. "Would you like a cup of tea?" As they finished their meal, Meredith's interest in Hawthorne Cottage hung in the air between them. Grace felt wrong-footed, all too aware that she was alone in this big old house, with only this austere woman and a resident ghost for company. Meanwhile, Meredith kept up a steady stream of conversation about local concerns, the extension of the railway line, the ridiculous price of oil heating, her fight with the council to get the one streetlight in the village working again. Grace half listened as she turned Meredith's words over in her mind. Millie had been taken out of her high chair, and for a time she sat on the floor, playing with her toys contentedly. But as the evening progressed, she began to cling to her mother's legs more and more, yawning and whining. "I think I should get her to bed soon." Grace set down her empty cup. "Can I help you clear up?"
"No need," Meredith said. "It was nice to have the company."
Grace collected the toys and lifted Millie onto her hip. She felt she should reciprocate Meredith's generosity with a meal invitation, but her culinary skills were nowhere near as good, and anyway, the kitchen was out of action at the moment. Meredith showed them to the door and held out a hand.
"Thank you for coming, Grace, and remember to consider my offer, won't you?
I will, Grace assured her. She walked to the car, put Millie in her seat and clicked the buckles together, then had to spray the windscreen with de-icer before she could start the engine. While she did all this, Meredith stood motionless in the doorway, her body backlit by the lights behind her, so that all Grace could see was her silhouette. As Grace began to back out, she waved, but Meredith didn't move as they drove out of sight. Chapter 14. On Saturday morning, Ben arrived at the front door, toolbox in hand, to clear up the final debris from knocking down the wall. The last couple of days had been difficult for Grace. Millie hadn't been napping well, which made it hard for Grace to get things done. And she missed the kitchen. She'd eaten noodles from packets for 2 nights in a row and was desperate to cook herself a meal. She was glad the work was started, but was already looking forward to the break for Christmas. Meredith's offer kept running through her mind, although she had made it without knowing of the renovations underway. Perhaps it wouldn't stand now anyway. But what if it did? In that case, did Grace really need to be here, resurrecting the past? She had had a restless night last night. No demonic dogs had appeared to her, but instead, she had dreamed of Adam. He was trying to tell her something, his face frantic, sometimes with worry, sometimes with fear. He looked to be shouting the words, but there was only silence. At one stage, he had raised his arms, and Grace had seen that he was behind thick glass as he banged his hands on it over and over. She had woken numb with cold, to a darkness so absolute that she couldn't see her fingers held an inch from her face. For a moment, it felt as though she no longer existed at all. Shaking, she fumbled frantically for the bedside light switch. The room lit up, everything in place, at rest. She had taken long, deep breaths, and when she felt calmer, had picked up Rebecca. Soon she was engrossed, getting through almost 100 pages before she fell asleep again. In her dreams, for a while she lay among bluebells, with a cocker spaniel running through the meadow. But then she was no longer amid flowers, but on bare brown earth, and she had scrambled up to see Meredith's schoolhouse towering above her, windows blazing with light. Shivering uncontrollably from the freezing night air, she rushed towards the brightness and warmth, peeping through a large window, to find a dance taking place. Couples whirling, a blur of colour. And while she stood there, a woman to one side in a white dress, hat in hand, turned slowly towards the window, caught Grace's eye, and her mouth opened in the stretched O shape of a scream. Grace had woken up sweating this time. The scream lingered beyond her dreams for a moment, frightening her further before it died away. She found she was still clasping the book and threw it onto the floor before scrambling out of bed, flicking light switches and going to splash water on her face. She had registered herself in the mirror, but looked away before she could catch her own reflected eye. When Ben arrived, he began to fill her in on his progress, but she barely listened, still caught in her reverie, until he put down his toolbox and reached out, gently touching her arm. "Grace? Grace? Are you all right?" Grace focused on him, and they were still for a second, their eyes locked, before Ben dropped his hand. It took Grace a moment longer to recover. She took a breath. "Yes, of course," she said, bending down to rescue Millie, who had crawled over to Ben's toolbox and was trying to pick up a hammer. Half an hour later, while Millie was napping, Grace heard the crunch of gravel as she was tidying upstairs. She peered out the window and saw Annabelle climbing from her car, an obvious city girl, in her sparkling knit top and jeans, teamed with knee-high boots. Ben was downstairs, somewhere,
clearing up and doing some preliminary work on the fireplace. She ran down to the front door to make introductions and got there in time to see Annabelle stop halfway along the path, dragging an enormous suitcase, her mouth dropping as Ben opened the door ahead of Grace, carrying a bag of rubbish. "Annabelle, this is Ben," Grace said behind him. Annabelle glanced towards her sister, her face full of wry amusement. "He's helping with the renovations, remember?"
"Ah," Annabelle grinned. "I do remember, Grace," she said, looking at Ben and offering him her hand. "It's very nice to meet you."
Annabelle's flirtations were never subtle, and Grace watched on with resignation as Ben took hold of her slender fingers.
"Same here."
He smiled civilly.
"Would you like me to take that for you?"
He motioned towards her case.
"Yes, please."
Annabelle looked delighted. As soon as he'd gone, Annabelle came close to Grace and said in an undertone,
"You didn't tell me he was so good looking. Finally, this place has something to offer. I might have to buy myself some shiny new wellies and come and visit more often."
Grace rolled her eyes as she followed her sister inside. Annabelle claimed she didn't have time for romance because of her career, but apparently she had no qualms where flirting was concerned. Grace's friend James regularly joked that it was Annabelle's favourite sport. At the thought of James, Grace felt guilty. She hadn't even let him know that she was back in Yorkshire. She knew she was putting it off, in case he questioned what she was doing here. The problem was, despite their recent differences, he still knew her too well. While in the hallway, she heard Millie beginning to stir. She went to collect her daughter, finding her yawning and needing her nappy changed. By the time they got back downstairs, Annabelle was curled up on the sheet-covered sofa, steaming mug cradled in her hands, observing Ben as he worked by the fireplace.
"I was just asking Ben about his Christmas plans," Annabelle said as she spied Grace, "and he hasn't got any, as it turns out. So I've invited him to join us. The more the merrier, right?"
As Ben faced them, Grace saw that his cheeks were slightly flushed.
"Look,"
he began.
"I hadn't actually..."
"Ben, it's fine," Annabelle chided. "It's the least Grace can do when you've spent all week working on the cottage. Come on. I promise us Taylor girls know how to have a good time. Don't we, Grace?"
"Of course," Grace agreed. "Annabelle's right. You're very welcome to join us."
"In fact, we'll be completely offended if you don't," Annabelle added cheerfully.
Ben looked unsure, but said,
"In that case, thanks,"
and moved back to the fireplace, continuing to take measurements. Millie struggled out of Grace's arms and crawled over to Ben, putting her hands on his knee and pulling herself up to inspect what he was doing. Ben turned to her and smiled, and she gave a shy smile back. Grace watched them, wondering what it was about Ben that Millie found so intriguing.
"I thought that thing was supposed to have wound down by now."
Annabelle was looking beyond the living room doorway towards the grandfather clock. Grace immediately tuned into the steady ticking and shuddered. "Actually, you're right. It should have. I thought it had stopped last weekend, but it started again." She remembered the fright it had given her, then frowned. "I think it's been going ever since." "That doesn't make sense," she thought, beginning to feel hot with panic.
"Did you want to let it wind down?"
Ben sounded apologetic.
"I'm sorry. I didn't realise. It stopped on Wednesday while I was here, so I wound it up again for you."
Grace let out a sigh of relief. "It doesn't matter," she said, relieved that there was a rational, ordinary explanation.
"What has gotten into you?"
she scolded herself.
"You didn't believe in ghosts before. There's no reason to start now."
Then her focus shifted to her sister, as Annabelle cried,
"Guess what, Grace? I've got some great news.
She nearly spilled her tea as she bounced up and down on the sofa.
I pitched a piece about living with ghosts to my editor, and she loved it. So I'll be able to do some research while I'm here for Christmas.
Oh, right. Grace was unable to match her sister's vivacity. When did you decide to do that?
On the drive back from here. I couldn't stop thinking about what Meredith and Claire said. I can't believe they're so glib about living with a ghost. If there really is a ghost in the house, of course. Perhaps they're fibbing, and that's why they don't care. But whatever, readers will lap it up. It'll make a great story. I'm going to try to persuade them to talk to me and see what else I can uncover of the local spirit population. I can see the piece now. All moody black and white photographs. I haven't quite got the angle yet, but it'll come.
Grace had kept her eye on Ben and Millie as Annabel talked. He was holding a tape measure along one side of the mantelpiece, but he wasn't moving, and she was sure he was listening to them. Annabel hadn't noticed.
I'm actually quite excited about it. Who would have believed that a bit of frosty old countryside would fire up my imagination?
Yes, it's great, Grace agreed, trying to be supportive. Then a thought came to her. She went across to the boxes, rummaged around, and returned with a book. Adam's grandmother wrote this. She passed it over. I've been meaning to rescue it from my charity pile. It should help you with the piece.
Wow! Ghosts of the Moors. This is perfect,
Annabel said, as she began flicking through it. Grace knelt down on the floor beside Millie. She spent a few moments showing her daughter how to stack her blocks to make different shapes. In the silence, Ben kept his back to them, ostensibly making notes, but Grace wasn't convinced. Annabel continued leafing through the book with interest.
Looks like most of my research has been done for me. God bless you, Granny Lockwood,
she cried, waving the book in the air as though Connie were floating above them in the room.
Are you related to Adam Lockwood, by any chance?
Both Grace and Annabel looked at Ben in astonishment. He had gotten to his feet. His brow was furrowed, his eyes full of interest. Yes, Grace replied. She took a breath, summoning up the courage it took to explain. Adam is my husband. He went missing this time last year, just after we'd moved in here. I've come back to sort through his grandparents' belongings, decide what to do next with the cottage. Ben's eyes were wide as he listened, his mouth agape. He seemed lost for words. Grace felt herself flushing under his stare.
Did you know Adam? Annabel asked.
The question drew him out of his stupor. He blinked rapidly and shook his head as he answered,
No, not really, but I know the name.
It made the news last year, Annabel said, when he disappeared.
I didn't see that. I've lived in Australia for a long time, but I grew up not far away.
Australia? Fantastic! Annabel exclaimed. So what the hell are you doing here?
Ben didn't reply. He and Grace were staring at one another. Grace was full of questions, while it appeared as though Ben were seeing her in a completely new light, and she wasn't sure whether she liked it. He broke away first, picking up his notepad and tape.
I've got what I need. I'll leave you both to it.
As he headed for the door, Annabel followed him.
Hang on a moment, Ben. If you know the area, can you take me out one day on a ghost hunt?
Grace expected him to decline, but he answered,
If you like.
Great! I'll pop by later and we can plan a trip.
Annabel looked at her sister and winked.
You don't mind, do you, Grace? I won't distract him for long.
Ben was already in the hallway, and Grace was glad that he couldn't see her face as she replied, Of course not. Chapter 15.
So,
Annabel said a few hours later,
looking around the living room. Shall we loll here getting drunk, or shall we dive into a few of these boxes?
How about both? Grace suggested, surprised and grateful for the offer, as she went over to the kitchen area, returning quickly with a bottle of red wine.
Great idea!
Annabelle grabbed a glass and held it out. Once it had been filled, she knelt by the boxes.
So, how do you want to go about it?
Well, I've been tipping them out one at a time and sorting everything into three piles. Keep, throw away, and give to charity.
Righto,
Annabelle said, grabbing the box closest to her and dumping its contents onto the carpet before Grace could object.
Lots of clothes here.
Thanks, Annabelle, Grace said dryly. I've actually been through that one already.
Oh my God, what is this?
Annabelle cried, ignoring her and holding up a long dress printed with large purple, green and orange daisies.
Flower power or what? Hang on, I have to try this on.
She wriggled out of her blouse and jeans and pulled the dress over her head.
How do I look?
She asked. And at Grace's giggles, she rushed out of the room and up the stairs, undoubtedly heading for the bedroom, where there was a full-length mirror. Grace heard the excited exclamations from where she sat and winced, half expecting Millie to wake up and counter them with a shriller reply of her own. Annabelle's footsteps came rushing down the stairs again, but there was no other sound to be heard, and Grace silently offered a prayer of thanks.
Hilarious,
Annabelle pronounced.
Right, you have to put something on from this lot. Let's see, what about this?
She pulled out a cream blouse with outlandish ruffles and then delved back into the box until she produced a pair of bright purple corduroy flares.
Come on, get them on.
They weren't going to get much done, but Annabelle's enthusiasm was infectious. Grace sprang up and put down her wine. Soon she was wearing her own ensemble, and Annabelle had found the closest thing to 70s music she could in Grace's collection, the Moulin Rouge version of Lady Marmalade. They began trying to remember as many of John Travolta's Saturday Night Fever moves as they possibly could, and Grace was doubled over laughing, when they were interrupted by a sharp knock on the door.
I'll get it,
Annabelle sang, and boogied her way out of the room.
Meredith! Claire!
Grace heard her cry, and she felt her light-heartedness vanish. You two look like you're having fun, Meredith said, coming into the living room. Annabelle was behind her, swinging her hips and clicking her fingers, flicking an amused glance towards Grace. Claire followed at the back of the group, smiling. Yet from Meredith's expression, Grace felt like a child caught doing something she shouldn't. She went over and switched off the music. It's lovely to see you both. Would you like a drink?
No, thanks, Meredith replied. We won't stop if you're busy.
We came to let you both know about the ball at Freeborough Hall on Christmas Eve, Claire explained. It's a bit of a local event and we thought you might enjoy it.
Sounds great,
Annabelle replied, going across to the countertop to replenish her wine glass and returning with the bottle in her other hand. She poured more into Grace's glass as she added,
We'd love to.
I don't think we can, actually, Grace demurred. Because of Millie?
Didn't Emma volunteer to babysit for you?
Annabelle interjected.
Yes, but...
But nothing, Grace. You need a break now and again. Let's ask her, and if she's free, then we'd love to come.
Okay, then. Meredith took hold of Claire's arm and turned to leave. We won't keep you. Just let us know if you want tickets. I'm on the committee, so it won't be a problem. She stopped in the doorway. You know, they look like Rachel's clothes, she said, staring hard at Grace before she left the room. Claire raised her hand affably, then followed her mother. Annabelle saw them to the door, then returned and looked perplexedly at Grace.
Well, she said, there's a woman who knows how to kill a mood. And who the hell is Rachel?
Adam's mum. Grace threw herself into one of the armchairs.
Now she felt awful about prancing around in a dead woman's clothes, as though she were dancing on her grave. Maybe she did need Meredith to help her sort through these things.
Oh, I see.
Annabel went across to the sofa and sat down.
Well, don't feel bad. I'm sure Rachel would rather we were dancing in her clothes than we left them festering and moth-bitten in a dusty old attic.
Grace smiled at her sister and tried to rouse her spirits. She went to put on her pajamas, and when she returned, Annabel had changed the music and was back in her own clothes. Together they emptied another box onto the floor.
So, tell me about Ben,
Annabel said a little while later, as she sorted through a pile of linen. Grace kept her eyes down as she replied, I'm not sure I can. I don't know much about him other than the fact he knows how to knock down a wall. You got more out of him today than I've managed to in a week.
He lives alone in the house at the top of the hill?
Yes, I think so. However, as she spoke, Grace remembered the woman she'd seen leaving early one morning. She opened her mouth to tell Annabel about the redhead, then closed it again, deciding not to. He's house-sitting, and he said he's an architect, but other than that, he keeps himself to himself. In fact, she thought, he was particularly good at answering her questions without actually telling her anything.
Don't worry, I'll find out all about him when he takes me out,
Annabel said confidently.
Well, good luck. He's painfully difficult to talk to.
Annabel laughed.
God, I'm used to that in my line of work.
She put the last of the linen into another charity box.
Can we call it a night now?
Let's just do this one, Grace suggested, and moved to a small box in the corner, pulling out what looked like a photo album. She opened it, and her breath caught painfully in her throat. It was Grace and Adam's wedding day. She had looked at their official photos many times, but she'd never seen these before. They were simple snapshots. Adam waiting outside the church, Adam with his arms around his grandparents, then Adam and Grace at the church after they'd been married. She turned the pages to see Adam and Grace with his grandparents, Adam and Grace with her parents, with Annabel, with her extended family, with their friends, Adam and Grace. She had to summon all her willpower to swallow the emotion that began to rise in her throat. She searched their faces for some clue that their love story was destined to end abruptly, that they weren't as happy as she had imagined. But all she could see was joyful smiles and laughter. That night, as they had gone to sleep in a four-poster bed, Adam had whispered his love in her ear, telling her he'd had the greatest day of his life. And when he'd first held Millie in his arms, he'd promised he would do everything possible to protect his family. He'd said it was such gravitas. Too much gravitas? How would she ever know? Could she really live the rest of her life with all this doubt? But what choice had he left her? She'd forgotten about Annabel until she moved closer. Grace leaned her head on her sister's shoulder, and Annabel wrapped an arm around her.
I don't get it.
Grace's voice began to break.
Why would he just go? He couldn't. It isn't right, Belle. But I don't know. What if he...
Enough, Annabel insisted, taking the album from her, putting it back in the box and then closing the lid.
You're drunk and emotional, Grace. Here.
She took Grace's glass and poured them both another wine.
Remind me how will this help?
Grace asked, before she put the full glass to her lips.
Medicinal purposes,
Annabel replied assuredly, and took a great gulp of her own drink. By the time they went to bed, they had both drunk far too much. For Grace, this normally meant that she would sleep solidly until morning, but tonight her rest was fitful, with blurry visions running into one another, strange shadows on hilltops, indistinct figures walking towards and then away from her, Adam's face close to her own, an empty bed, a stone bridge, a stream. then finding herself standing alone in a glade of trees, a voice calling her name, chasing it, only to hear it echoing behind her, twisting and turning, trying to find its source but never catching up. She woke with a start numerous times, settling down when she heard Annabelle's soothing snores beside her. But each time she fell asleep again, her dreams only tormented her more. In the morning, Grace woke up groggy and dazed, and when she moved to the window, she saw that overnight the landscape had been transformed by a pure white covering of snow. Chapter 16.
I've got a surprise for you, Annabelle said. She had disappeared briefly mid-morning, but Grace had been too busy with Millie to notice where she'd gone.
And what would that be? Grace asked, helping Millie with her drink.
I've just seen Emma next door, and she says she'll be happy to babysit on Christmas Eve, so we can go to the ball Meredith was talking about.
Grace swung to face Annabelle, hand on hip.
I can't believe you did that without asking me first.
Annabelle glared at her.
Oh, lighten up, Grace. They live next door. Emma's the most convenient babysitter you'll ever find. She's even coming round here so you can put Millie down in her own bed. The most she might do is use a tea bag or eat a packet of crisps. Could you please live with that and stop being such a wuss?
But Grace wasn't going to be talked down. No, Annabelle, that's not the point. When Millie's concerned, I make the decisions. I'm going round to apologise right now. She picked up Millie and went outside, stomping down the garden path before heading next door. She rapped hard on the door and waited. Moments later, a teenage boy answered. His face was so white that if Grace hadn't heard Emma and Carl mention a son, she would have suspected that this was the resident ghost of next door's cottage. His blue eyes and ruby mouth looked strangely artificial against the rest of his flesh, like they had been coloured in, and she was sure his eyes were rimmed with black eyeliner.
Is your mum in?
She asked politely. He left the door open and skulked off, his shoulders hunched. Emma came to the door a moment later, tea towel in hand.
Grace, come in,
she said cheerily.
Don't worry about Jake. He's going through his goth phase. And hello, little lass.
She reached out and took Millie from Grace. Now you, she said to Millie,
are just in time to sample some of Auntie Emma's cupcakes. They're still warm.
And she carried Millie down the hallway. Grace followed her through to the kitchen and launched straight into her apology. I gather Annabelle asked you about babysitting Millie. I'm sorry, she got a bit ahead of herself, and I hope it didn't look rude. She spoke to you before consulting me. You'll surely have other plans on Christmas Eve.
Oh, don't be daft, Emma said.
I'm happy to. I told you at the pub. We're staying home this year, so I'll get everything sorted in the afternoon.
Then Carl can stay in with our bairn, and I'll come round a little early so you can tell me where everything is. I'll be glad to leave this place for a while, truth be told. It's all moody silences from the lad and bursts of irritation from Carl at the moment. If it's just me and the baby, it's like a little holiday, so I won't know what to do with a few hours to myself. I'm quite excited about it.
She stroked Millie's hair, and as Millie put her fingers towards Emma's mouth, she pretended to bite them. Millie let out a joyous squeal, making both women laugh. Emma went across to a tray of cakes, then looked back at Grace.
Is she allowed?
Yes, that's fine. Millie took one eagerly. Then Emma turned on the kettle and came and sat down with the little girl on her lap. Millie looked at her treat happily before biting into it with satisfaction.
So, what time do you want me then?
Emma asked. Grace recalled Annabelle's excitement and considered how contented Millie appeared to be with Emma. She reminded herself how long it had been since she'd had a night out and made her decision.
About 7, if you're sure.
Grace, relax. It's absolutely fine,
Emma insisted. Now, you must stay for a cup of tea and tell me what you've been up to since I last saw you. I gather you've been busy, what with all the banging this week.
Oh, no. I hope the noise hasn't been bothering you,
Grace said contritely.
I've had the wall knocked down between the kitchen and the lounge. I'm trying to make it a bit less pokey downstairs.
Don't worry about the noise. It hasn't been bad,
Emma reassured her.
I'm looking forward to seeing what you've done. I'm sorry I haven't invited you round sooner. I've been so busy with the kids and getting ready for Christmas. I hope you haven't been lonely.
Grace shook her head. I'm fine. Annabelle's staying till after Christmas now, and I've had a couple of meals at Meredith's.
Really?
Emma looked intrigued as she handed Millie back to Grace and went to pour the tea.
How did that come about?
She invited me.
Well, I'm amazed. We've lived here for 5 years, and we've never been invited over once, let alone twice.
What did you do to deserve Meredith Blakeney's hospitality?
I think it might have been because she's interested in renting the cottage,
Grace admitted.
Is that right?
Emma put two mugs on the table, along with a carton of milk and a pot of sugar.
What would Meredith want with your little cottage when she fancies herself the lady of the manor in that big old house up there?
Grace didn't know how to reply, since she was asking herself the same question. Emma mulled it over, then sat back.
Don't be bullied by that family, Grace.
Why do you say that? Grace asked uneasily, as she poured milk into her tea.
Oh, I've heard a few rumours. They sound like a mixed-up lot.
Really? What have you heard?
Emma shook her head. Perhaps that's a bit unfair of me. They've been through a hard time lately, what with Ted passing away like he did.
But Grace was too curious to let it go.
Still, is there anything I should be aware of?
Emma took a sip of her tea.
Oh, I don't have that much to tell. I only know Meredith in passing. But I've caught a bit of gossip about her. Usually people saying that she interferes with her daughter's lives too much. She's caused some mighty spats between her children, so I'm told. And one of her son-in-laws, Dan, seems to dislike her intensely. Often badmouths her if you come across him in any of the local pubs. Mind you, he's not exactly a saint. He used to be a policeman, but there was a big scandal last year. Something to do with him turning a blind eye to a mate dealing drugs. He got kicked out of the force. And apparently, it was Meredith who found him another job in Leeds. Something to do with security. Just as well, since his wife's expecting a little one shortly. From what I gather, if Meredith's daughters have a problem, they run straight to their mother and she sorts it out for them. You know that one of them is staying there right now?
Yes, Grace said. I've met her. Claire. She seems really nice. Says it's just a stopgap.
Emma looked surprised, then chuckled. Grace, you probably know more about them than I do. Now, tell me what you've got planned for the rest of your cottage.
Grace began to fill Emma in on the renovations. After a while, Emma noticed that Grace's mug was empty.
Another cuppa?
Grace checked her watch. I'd better not. I should be getting back. Annabelle will be waiting for us. Grace began to get up, and Emma went across to the countertop, returning with a Tupperware container full of cupcakes.
Here, take these. I always make far too many.
Millie snatched the box gleefully before Grace could say anything, and they laughed.
Thank you, Grace said, following Emma along the hallway.
Now, are you sure?
Grace, go and have some fun. Millie will be fine with me.
Well, I owe you one. As Grace started down the path, she glanced to her right to see next door's chimney puffing away. Emma stood on the step behind her and followed her gaze.
Have you met Jack yet?
Grace shook her head.
You'll be lucky if you do. We hardly ever see him. His chimney goes almost 24 hours, but he never switches on his lights. You only come across him when he's feeding his birds.
Something clicked in Grace's mind.
Oh, is that where the noise is coming from? I've heard a few screeches. It's pretty unnerving at night.
Thought the spirits were out, did you?
No,
it's just the owls next door.
Jack's obsessed with them. People round here call him Feathery Jack.
I think he's got two at the moment, though he's had up to half a dozen.
And not just owls either. He takes everything from kestrels to crows. We only know this because sometimes the birds are out in the front garden when you go past.
Carl says he's meant to have licenses for them, but it looks like he's tending injured ones back to health, so no one's going to report him.
I haven't seen him or the birds. Grace surveyed the cottage with its smoking chimney. In London, her neighbours had included two accountants and an aspiring model. How times had changed.
Don't worry, he's harmless enough,
Emma reassured her. Grace turned and smiled. Thanks again, Emma. I'll see you soon. Then she headed home. So the screeches were from owls that lived two doors away, she thought as she walked down the pathway. There had been no need for all the anxiety about unknown noises. She had to stop worrying about everything and loosen up a bit. Over the next few days, she would keep searching, and by the time Christmas arrived, she would surely be closer to answers. Chapter 17.
What an incredible afternoon, Annabel said, coming into the living room and flinging herself onto a chair.
She ran her fingers through her damp hair. It's snowing, she explained as she noticed Grace glaring at her.
Ben says it's meant to get bad after Christmas. We might be stranded, she added, sounding absolutely fine about that.
Grace could barely resist the urge to run over and pull her sister's hair, as she would have done when they were younger. In the past 3 days, she had barely seen Annabel. While Grace had put on old clothes and begun sorting through the cupboards and drawers, listening to endless crappy Christmas music blaring from the radio and wishing away the time, Annabel had been out every day. First of all, she'd gone to Leeds to finish my Christmas shopping, returning with copious Harvey Nichols bags in the trunk of her car. Next, Ben had fulfilled his promise and taken her roving over the moors. Then yesterday evening, Annabel had announced that they were going out again. Grace was still feeling slightly disgruntled that neither of them had thought to invite her and Millie, but much worse was that she had uncovered absolutely nothing of significance concerning Adam. She was beginning to question the wisdom of returning to the cottage in the first place. She couldn't wait for Christmas, and the excuse for a break. Annabel began to waffle on about their visit to Whitby, saying she was still full of their famous fish and chips, and describing a severed hand that Ben had shown her in the local museum.
It's called the Hand of Glory, she said, though it's more gory than glory. It's an actual hand that's been pickled to preserve it, and there are all sorts of legends around it to do with paralysing people or sending them to sleep. It's pretty grim.
Grace decided never to go near that museum if she could help it, while Annabel continued talking.
This place is fascinating, you know. All over the moors, there are these tall stone crosses with different names, like Fat Betty and Old Ralph. I thought they were gravestones at first, but apparently there are different reasons for them. Many function as memorials, religious icons, or old signposts. In many cases, I don't think it's even known for certain why they're in place. And we also went to this little pub in the middle of nowhere with a ghost chair in the corner. It's cursed, supposedly, so that anyone who sits in it will die soon afterwards.
For God's sake, Grace said, not wanting to hear any more.
I know, it's brilliant,
Annabel cried, misreading Grace's mood completely.
And then, to top off everything, it began to snow when we were coming home, and it's taken us ages to get back. The snow is incredible in the dark.
You can't see anything. It's like jumping into the white noise on the TV. I don't even know how Ben managed to stay on the road. It's utterly disorientating. He was telling me about one of the locals who got caught in a blizzard and tried to walk home and got lost. He collapsed and died in the snow. And when they found him, he was only a few metres from his front door. I wouldn't have believed it if I hadn't just seen what it's like with my own eyes. She leapt up. We're really cut off, aren't we? She said, with a visible shiver. Have we got everything we need? Grace went over to the window and peered outside. The porch light cast a short dome of illumination over the garden, which was white with the snow that fell thickly. Beyond that, there was nothing to see except blackness. She pictured Millie upstairs. What had she brought her to? A flash of movement caught her eye. Something was out there. She squinted, looking harder. But now she couldn't see anything. Perhaps the ceaseless fall of the snow was playing tricks on her vision. But then, a figure came into view, just beyond the low garden wall. A man wearing a padded jacket and gloves, his head down, a thick scarf around his neck. He pushed at the gate a few times, as though the latch was stuck, but finally freed it. As he hurried down the path, he lifted his head, causing Grace to cry out in amazement. She rushed into the hallway and flung open the door. James, what the hell are you doing here? She threw herself into his embrace, feeling absolutely safe as he wrapped his strong arms around her.
What a welcome.
James stepped back, his face glowing. Grace heard Annabel behind her. Well, 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 look what the cat dragged in. When she looked around, Annabel was smiling. Happy Christmas, Grace, James said. Did you know about this? Grace demanded, grinning at Annabel.
She invited me,
James confirmed, as Grace looked from one to the other. I don't believe it. Grace hugged James again, while she kept telling herself that things would work out. With James here, she felt more confident about being right. Grace had only seen James a couple of times since he'd headed off to Switzerland to work in a bank. His departure had been hasty, and Grace knew she was partly to blame for that. She vividly recalled that night in a London bar when James had introduced her to Adam as a friend of a friend. The way he'd watched them as they'd hit it off. Now she could see his face dropping. Now she could see the tension in his arm as he repeatedly lifted his pint to his mouth. Back then, she had completely missed it. Right up until the time, a year later, that she and Adam had held their engagement party, and James had gotten horribly drunk, stormed out, and thrown up on the pavement. That night, he had told her that he loved her, and that he had been waiting patiently in the background for Grace to figure out that she loved him too. It was as though she had never known her best friend. She realized he'd never had a girlfriend that she could remember, only a few one-night stands. Why didn't you say something much, much earlier? She had admonished. He'd been too scared of rejection, he'd admitted. Instead, he'd hoped to see something in her face one day that meant she had discovered her own feelings for him. After that, he'd buried his face in his hands. Once James was in Switzerland, they had never spoken about it again. Neither of them wanted to risk saying or doing anything that might finally sever their bond. Nevertheless, James had come to France in the aftermath of Adam's disappearance. He had held her tightly while she sobbed herself to sleep, taken her out to try and distract her, and shown her a picture of his new Swiss girlfriend, taken from a magazine, Annabel suggested slyly behind his back. However, later on they had visited Grace, and James had looked very proud as he'd put his arm around Natasha and introduced them.
I'm surprised you made it through the snow, Annabel was saying to James as Grace tuned back into the conversation.
You're telling me, James said as he took off his coat and shoes. Where the hell is this, Grace? The drive here has been crazy. I've hardly been able to see more than 10 metres.
I've practically been hallucinating. I was half expecting to come across Santa's cottage and find him tending his reindeers and filling up his sleigh. They all went back through to the living room. After they had plied James with wine and he'd warmed up a bit, he explained, "I called you Mum and Dad, as I actually fancied a beautiful French Christmas, and that's when they told me you'd locked yourself away in the wilderness up here, with nothing but a toddler and a list of things to do for company. Oh, and a minx of a sister," he added, looking across at Annabel. Annabel pretended to punch his arm. "Bet they didn't tell you she's got a hottie helping her with the cottage." "Which is probably the only reason Annabelle's actually staying here," Grace put in. "Since I have been working my butt off, and Annabel is actually a one-woman tour group, distracting my employee and roaming the moors with him under the pretext of researching an article that I've seen no sign of her writing." "Now, now, ladies," James said, settling back on the sofa with his wine. "I can see I arrived just in time to stop you two from pulling each other's hair out."
"How's Natasha?"
Annabel asked. James's face fell. "It's over." Resignation propped up his smile as he added, "Drifted apart." Grace moved towards him, but he held up a hand. "No sympathy needed. I knew she wasn't the one." He leaned back. "So, what's the plan for Christmas then? Aside from Millie getting her Santa loot?" His smile was genuine now.
"I can't wait to see her."
He reached for Grace's hand and gave it a squeeze. Unaccountably, Grace felt herself begin to well up.
"You'll be amazed. She's changed so much."
"She tries to bite you now if you annoy her, so watch out," Annabel added.
"Really?"
James looked at Grace in amusement. "It's a recent phase, sadly. Anyway, how long are you planning to stay?"
"Just a few days. My boss wants me straight back after New Year's."
"That's great. But you do know I haven't got a spare room." Grace glanced worriedly about the place. "We're a bit cramped here." James patted the sofa.
"Seems comfy enough. Unless this is your domain, Belle."
Grace snorted. "Not lightly. She's practically pushed me out of my own bed, the amount of space she takes up."
"Yeah, yeah," Annabel said. "Who's for more wine?"
She got up and plucked the bottle from the side, refilling their glasses without waiting for a response.
"Now you're here, perhaps we can get you into tomorrow's excitement," she told James.
"And what might that be?"
"A ball,"
Annabel squeaked with delight.
"Where?"
James asked, the corner of his mouth turning up.
"The local cowshed."
"And with who? There's no one here, guys. Just miles of empty space.
Is it just us and a flock of sheep ready to party?"
"There's a local hall," Annabel replied knowingly.
Grace sat back and listened, sipping her drink, well aware that she was unlikely to get a word in.
"A very posh hall, by all accounts. And the local riffraff have a Christmas Eve ball. It's a tradition that started a decade ago, and everyone loved it so much that they've done it every year since. A rich aristocrat owns the place and lets them use it. They raise quite a bit for charity."
"How long have you lived here, Annabel?" James said, a twinkle in his eye as he looked at Grace.
"You really are in the right profession, aren't you? Is there anything you don't know after you've been somewhere for 5 minutes?
Grace laughed, while Annabel feigned indignance.
"Well, it's a ticketed event, so I don't know if we'll get you in."
"Ignore her," Grace chuckled. "We'll get you a ticket. I'll call Meredith in the morning."
"But I haven't got a suit, let alone a tux," James said. "Presuming I can come, of course,"
he added sarcastically to Annabel.
"There's probably a shop in the next town."
Annabel looked thoughtful.
"We'll check it out tomorrow when we go and get the supplies for Christmas dinner."
"What would I do without you, Belle?"
James replied, raising an eyebrow at Grace, before he settled back onto the sofa and closed his eyes. Grace smiled as she watched him, thinking that it had made her Christmas simply to have him here.
As Grace made her way downstairs with Millie the next morning, she expected to find James still asleep. However, he was up and fully dressed, seated at the small dining table with a coffee, looking over some papers.
"Hi,"
he said on seeing her, and then,
"Hello, Millie. Wow, you've grown so much."
Millie whipped around and hid her face in her mother's neck. "She's always a bit shy," Grace explained apologetically.
"Understood. Not to worry,"
James replied.
"Actually, I've got a present for her."
He went across and pulled a large brown teddy out of his bag, then jiggled it around, trying to coax Millie to play, but she gripped onto Grace even more tightly. Grace took the teddy and attempted to give it to Millie, but the little girl snatched it and threw it on the floor. Grace was embarrassed. "She takes time to respond to new people and new toys," she reassured James, noticing that he was crestfallen despite his efforts to hide it. "Ask Annabelle, she's had the same treatment." Yet Grace couldn't help but remember Millie holding her arms out to Ben and kneeling by his side. James sat down again, and Grace strapped her daughter into her high chair, then went to put Millie's morning milk into the microwave. Once it was ready, she shook the drink before giving it to her daughter, who used it as a security barrier from which she could inspect James further.
"My God, she's like you," James said.
"Really?" Grace smiled. "In what way?"
"Well, big eyes and long legs for a start,"
he replied immediately. Grace laughed. "Most people tend to see Adam in her, since she's got his colouring and his curly hair."
"Yes, well, perhaps it's more indefinable than hair colour, but I definitely recognise something in those baby blues peeping at me."
He stuck his tongue out playfully at Millie, but she looked worriedly at Grace. Grace moved over and stroked her hair. "Well, you're probably the only person who sees it."
"Perhaps it's because I know you a lot better than most,"
James replied. Millie broke the charged silence that followed by dropping her cup on the floor, and they both laughed.
"I'll get it,"
James said, and when he bobbed his head up above the table again, things were back to normal. "Shall I make you scrambled eggs for breakfast?" Grace asked as she flicked on the kettle.
"That would be great. I'll help you in a sec."
He glanced once more at the papers in front of him.
"I hope you don't mind. These were lying here, so I was taking a look at your plans."
"Of course I don't mind." Grace sat down opposite him. "So what do you think?"
"It's a really good idea, but it could be a lot of work. Are you all right out here, really? 'Cause this might take quite a while."
"I'll be okay. Besides, I've got Ben helping me out, so hopefully that will speed things up."
"Oh yes, Ben."
James put down the papers.
"Tell me about Annabelle's hottie. Has she seduced him yet?"
Grace ignored the unease she felt at the question.
"I doubt it.
He's very reserved. He's been a godsend to me, though, as I was worried it would take weeks for me to find someone to work on the cottage. Although Annabelle has been monopolizing him a bit of late for her story." Grace made speech marks in the air as she said the final word, and James chuckled. "They've been roving all over the moors with him telling her spooky tales. But that's all, I think."
"How romantic,"
James commented dryly.
"Trust Annabelle."
"Trust Annabelle what?"
said the woman herself, appearing at the door.
"I was admiring your dedication to getting a good story."
James laughed, then spluttered on his coffee as Annabelle clipped his head with her hand as she went past.
"Ow!
You deserved it."
"So what's the plan for today then?"
James asked.
"There appear to be all sorts of exciting possibilities around here."